Welcome back to the Godly Men Podcast, episode 120. Thank you very much for joining us. We haven't pushed for like ratings or reviews in a while. All the, you know, podcasts these days are saying like, rate, review, subscribe, all those things.
Yeah.
We would appreciate it if you're a faithful listener. Leave us a rating, leave us a review. Obviously, subscribe on YouTube and the podcast app if you have not. We are very appreciative of our Godly Young Men Podcast listeners. Join the Discord, which is a basically private Discord for Godly Young Men Podcast listeners. The link is in the description. It takes about 7 days or so for us to get back and approve those. But yeah, episode chat, fitness tips, all kind of stuff is on there. So yeah, love to have you there. But thanks for joining us. So the topic that we're talking about today, Joe, is one that I have grown up in this world for as long as I can remember.
No doubt, more than most.
And we discussed recently maybe the need to do a few more kind of scattered about. We don't want to do like a series or four or five in a row necessarily, but like episodes about kind of how we can know why we believe what we believe. Christian apologetics episodes, Christian evidence episodes. How do we know there's a God? I know the Bible's inspired. We did one on why does God allow evil, pain, and suffering in the world, bad things to happen. That's kind of an apologetics type of discussion. Yep. And so we're going to just do a few more of those kind of scattered here and there whenever the time comes. And we felt like this one this week was necessary to do. We're talking about kind of evolution. And oddly enough, Joe, and you and I were talking, and I'll kind of get to why this, what prompted us here in a second. And Joe, then you can talk about why this kind of got your wheels turning, so to speak. Yep. But we were talking about how the evolution has not really been in the cultural zeitgeist for a while.
Yeah.
Growing up with my dad, Brad Harab, this was really what got him famous. Obviously not that famous, but, you know, Church of Christ famous. And, you know, pretty fairly well known. He has a PhD in anatomy and neurobiology. And his seminars about why evolution is ridiculous, why you can believe creation, kind of Christian evidence seminars, man, there for a while from about 2005, really about, I guess, 2003 till 2015 or so, that's what everybody wanted to know about, was Christian evidences and why, you know, the problem of evolution. And for the longest time, that was everybody's biggest concern with the public school system, is that they were teaching evolution and universities. And you really don't hear about that quite as much anymore. Obviously, it's still taught. It's not like it went away, but I guess people just don't care about it as much. But Joe, you wanted to do this episode due to a podcast/YouTube kind of video that you listen. Yeah, I don't think you listen to the whole thing, but like basically some kind of YouTube podcast that if you want to share kind of what prompted this episode. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to this one.
Yeah, so for those that are familiar with Rhett and Link, pretty well known on YouTube. Some of the earlier YouTubers, I think they go back to literally like the beginning or very close to it. Millions and millions of subscribers. So Rhett McLaughlin, I think I pronounced that right, was a Christian. Like, they grew up Christian. They grew up as actually like Baptist missionaries, I think. Or they were going to become Baptist missionaries, and they grew up in the faith. I think based on what he was saying in the episode on this podcast, I think more Calvinist in
definitely
leaning.
Definitely Calvinist, yeah.
But yeah, so he recently went on Alex O'Connor's podcast, who is the Cosmic Skeptic.
He's an atheist, right?
Atheist, yeah. He's got millions of followers as well, millions of subscribers. Strong atheist, one of the bigger atheists, one of the more well-known atheists today, and I don't even know how this happened. Like,
young guy
too,
I think
he's 24, 25, and he's just like a big deal in the atheist world. He's getting all sorts of interviews with all sorts of people. Well, this one has 2.3 million views already, and this came out a few weeks ago. Like, this went big because everybody wanted to hear Rhett's deconstruction story. How did he fall away from the faith? It was fairly well known. They have their own podcast, Rhett and Link, called Ear Biscuits. I think last year, maybe the year before, he came out and said he was deconstructing and how he got there. Well, this one was more of his, like, okay, he's fully done it. Now, here's his story from start to finish. And in it, I thought it was very interesting. Like, you think, okay, what's the linchpin, man? What makes somebody who is so staunchly Christian growing up, he's in a Christian community, Christian family, marries a Christian wife. What makes that come about where he deconstructs, which is just falling away from the faith? Let's just call it what it is, right?
That term drives me nuts. Like, it's such like an arrogant sound. I deconstruct. Just say you walked away from Christianity.
Yeah, you
like,
walked away from God. You hate
an
God
intellectual
now.
Like, term just to make it sound
exactly
better.
Yeah. You now hate God. Just call it as it is.
Do your Muslim people who walk away, deconstructed from Islam? Maybe you do. I've never heard that before.
Dude,
but
deconstructed from Islam sounds like you blew yourself up.
Exactly.
Sorry to say, but like, that's just
sorry.
It's anyway,
pet peeve. Yeah.
But it's true. Like, deconstructed is a stupid term, but that's, I guess that's what it is. And
have we deconstructed from atheism? Is that where we are?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I suppose I'd have to be an atheist, and there's nothing to construct on in that, so I can't deconstruct from that. But yeah, anyway, it went really big, needless to say. And his big thing in all of this is evolution. I thought that was really interesting. Of all the things, like, man, yeah. Did he have, like, Darwin, did he have a kid die? Did he have some magic, or some massive tragedy, not magic tragedy, some massive tragedy, something bad? No, it was evolution. And he started looking at it going, man, I just can't deny evolution. And that led to him walking away from God. And so you realize, man, we have a problem here, because evolution has been widely accepted. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, as I was looking this up, and I was watching a reaction video, actually, William Lane Craig, big name in the apologetics world, Christian apologetics world. Yeah. He basically said, I don't think that evolution is central to the Christian faith. And
like,
I don't think
like
it's
believing in evolution.
Believing in evolution
not,
is central to that. Like, you can believe in evolution, and he may even entertain an old earth theory. Man, I think that's really wishy-washy. I think that's ridiculous. And I actually think that this is the bedrock to the entire foundation of the Bible. This is Genesis 1 and 2, the first two chapters of the Bible. We're pretty set on that. And I think it's ridiculous to think that it's an allegory, it's a myth, it's something along those lines. So I don't know. I'm talking a lot. But,
no,
yeah, feel free to jump in on
yeah,
any
I mean,
point of this.
So going back to my dad thing, like he taught on creation versus evolution for a decade plus. And when we were young, we traveled with him all the time. And so I got to sit through lesson after lesson after lesson.
Say, you could probably say it in your sleep.
Probably could. And obviously, you know, oh, that's just your dad's or your bias. No, I've read other books. I think I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist is one of the best apologetics books I've ever read on the subject. And so, yeah, I've been kind of immersed in the world since I was young. And Joe, I don't really know kind of the path you necessarily want to take for this outline, but the thought that I had on the, and I didn't watch the full Alex O'Connor video with Rhett McLaughlin either, but Rhett kind of made the statement, like, his wife came home one time, and his wife, apparently also has Christian background as well. And he told his wife, he didn't say that he was leaving Christianity, but he said in this particular instance, I am fully convinced that evolution is true. I am fully convinced that there is a common ancestor, or that he believes in common ancestry, that we are all essentially related. And so that was kind of, as you spoke to, kind of the linchpin, kind of the moment where his wife, and he made the point in this video, like, his wife realized, okay, if you believe that, then that's going to start to unravel your Christianity. And that's what I wanted to speak to, Joe, about kind of what you're talking about how it being such a foundational point to your Christianity. And the reason that I, because there's theistic evolution, which is the idea that there is a God, but he used evolution. Yeah. There is a God, but basically everything that science says other than the Big Bang is true. And some people even think that God used the Big Bang. The problem that I have with it, Joe, and I guess this is part of what you have on the outline, is to do that, to believe in God, but also believe in evolution. Number one, it's the compromising position. It's a very, like, I want to have my cake and eat it too position.
Right.
It's, yeah, I want to hold on to God, but I also want to sound really smart in front of, you know, like, not in front of, but, like, around the, I want to succumb to the intellectual intimidation of all
the scientific community.
All the smart people believe evolution. Yeah. So it's like, oh man, well, is there a way that I can still believe in God, Jesus, the Bible, but also believe in it? Cool. Like, give me that route. Like, I want to have my cake and eat it too thing. We're kind of riding the fence to say that I'm going to believe in God, but also believe in evolution. And I guess what I'm trying to get across is, if you believe in evolution, then you have to believe that the Bible is false.
Right.
Or at least to some degree false. And that's what a lot of people believe. They believe that the New Testament, great. A lot of the Old Testament's great. Genesis 1 through 11 might be mythical, allegorical.
Yeah.
Maybe there's millions of years that take place between Genesis 1 and 2 and stuff like that. And to me, if you believe that, you just you have to trust the Bible less.
Right.
You have to trust the Bible less. You can go through the Bible. You can track the lineage of where it says Adam, and then you go all the way to Jesus, and that gets you about 4,000 years. Well, we know from Jesus to us is 2,000 years. That's pretty easy math, right? We're in 2025 AD. 6,000 years-ish, call it 7 if you want to be extra conservative on the age of the earth, that doesn't leave time for evolution.
Right.
And so I think you can, again, I guess what I'm rambling here and saying is, if you're going to believe in evolution and still try to cling to Christianity, you have to trust the Bible less, which is a position I never want to find myself in.
Right. Jesus quotes from Genesis 2. He quotes one man and one woman from the very beginning. That's Genesis chapter 2. That is in the same chapter.
That's in the middle of the alleged allegory.
Correct.
Right.
That's in the middle of the creation story. Account, like, the creation event, yeah, in chapter one, it's more of a broad range, and then he kind of zeroes in and gives a little more detail in chapter two. And in that, he's talking about the garden and what's put in the garden. Man's put in the garden, and man, it's not good for man to be alone, Genesis 2:18. And then as you get into 19 and 20 through all the way through 25, you know, naked and unashamed, that's the marriage passage that Jesus is quoting from, and he's also attributing it to Moses, because a lot of times this goes hand in hand with Moses didn't write the Pentateuch, you know, he didn't write right, the first right, five books. Yeah. There was, it's a compilations, documentary hypothesis is technically the term, which is also ridiculous, but that's what you have to do. If you believe in evolution, you go, oh, man, well, what if this is all just kind of a, and what's his name? Jordan Peterson really gets into this of the types and the antitypes and things like that. He's very Jungian in approach, Carl Jung and such, so there's a lot of types, typology and whatnot. And so he looks at it as these are archetypes here. The archetype of like the creation account and all of these big stories, the flood and everything, didn't actually happen, but it was kind of the archetype for everything else. Like, no, but we have actual evidence that these things did take place, right, that these things did happen the way that it's, you know, we have fossils, fish fossils on Mount Everest. How does that happen? Like, oh, a local flood. Yeah, that seems like some local flood there. You know, so there's things like that that are just insane to not believe in my opinion. You have to take Jesus at his word when he's quoting directly from Genesis chapter 2. I think it's a real problem when we start allegorizing that, because what else in the Bible can we allegorize? How do we know that Jesus existed? Well, there are reasons for this. There's evidence to that as well. And interestingly, this is a little more on the deep end. The Bible does reference all the way through the book of Revelation, speaking of typology, it references the seven-day creation over and over and over. When you start looking at the seven, and you track the number seven throughout Scripture, like, there's a lot of things that point back to a seven-day creation event, and seven being the perfect number. So you can look at that and say, well, it's all allegory, and seven is one of those allegorical things. I choose to look at it and say, man, God knew exactly what he was doing. And here's the other thing. Without a seven-day creation, where did the concept of a week come from? Like, we That's wouldn't, good. Yeah. Where would the concept of a week come from? Everything else, you can look at the sun, you can look at the moon, you can look at, you know, for the moon for the month and the sun for the year, and as we travel around and things like that, even a day, sun goes up, sun goes down. What's a week? Without creation, there is no concept of a week, basically. It would come somewhere along the line. So I think there's a lot of reasons for that. But in my opinion, it is the only plausible explanation for life. But I wanted to get into the stats.
Yeah, get into some of the stats for us.
Then we'll get into, we haven't even hit the main point of the outline. But,
you're good.
So we'll have to run through this. But 65% of Americans say they believe humans have evolved over time. But around 98% of the scientific community and scholars believe it is the dominant theory for human development.
That's a big disparity.
Big disparity. So basically everybody in the scientific community believes it. Well, what does that do for the average person? Oh, well, the smart people believe it.
I guess I need to.
Only 2% say that it's not, that it's, you know, ridiculous. And so who's going to go with the 2%? Like, I will gladly stand with the 2% in this situation. But here's another one. 75% of all college graduates and fully 81% of those with a postgraduate degree believe that humans have evolved over time. By comparison, 56% of those with high school diploma or less say evolution has occurred. So the smarter you get, quote unquote, the more you believe in it. All that tells me is that colleges are nothing but an indoctrination camp. We already knew this.
Big pile of groupthink, essentially.
Correct. Yeah, like all the smart people believe this. And so be careful of this. You're going into college. Yeah, they're going to push evolution. They're going to make you feel stupid if you don't.
Can I just say real fast on that, the big group think, the whole idea of like, well, sounds like you guys just aren't smart enough to believe it. You know what else all the smart people believed one time? That the earth was flat.
Right.
You know what else all the smart people believe? Like, you know, there's so many things that, you know, all the smart people believe that the sun rotated around the earth. All the smart people believed that for the longest time. Right. And guess what? They were proved wrong. And so there's example after example. All the smart people believed that the best way to cure somebody is let them bleed, essentially, right, to death, in George Washington's case. Like, this has happened time and time again in history where the scientific community, all the smart people, believed a certain thing. And guess what? It was not true. And so you could look at 98%. I made this point on a previous episode. I might have been Think Deeper, but I don't care personally. Like, I don't care that 98% of the scientific community
that tells me nothing.
It tells me nothing. What it does tell me is that there is an enormous amount of groupthink that goes on.
And pressure.
And pressure, peer pressure, in a way, oddly, of like, again, man, all my professors, all the people I'm graduating with, the people I'm probably going to be working for, if I'm going to be working in the academic circle, they believe this. Well, I guess I can convince myself to believe that.
Right.
That's what it tells me. And in fact, because you're never going to see in any other circumstance in life that type of percentage of a 98% of people believe this one thing about this one event. That's just not realistic. And so to me, that's more evidence in the, groupthink, intellectual pressure, intimidation factor than it is anything else.
We're going to call it peer-reviewed pressure.
Peer-reviewed pressure.
Yeah, everything's peer-reviewed. Think about in the last 5 years, the smart people told us
masks and vaccines.
Yeah, exactly. COVID didn't come from China. The smart people from a lab in China. The smart people told us that 6 feet of separation works. The smart people told us masks work. The smart people told us vaccines work.
Jury's back on that.
Correct.
One.
Like all of that was the scientific community being right. And every single one of them have been proved wrong. So do I agree with the scientific community? No. I think a lot of them are bought and paid for. And I think a lot of them are going to have a difficult time standing up and going, no, that's ridiculous. The other thing that I think is a little misleading in the 98, and I looked this up, the 98% believe it is the dominant theory for that. I would agree that in academia, it is the dominant theory. I don't think
that's because you're not allowed to teach anything else.
Correct. I don't think it's a correct theory, but I think it's a dominant theory. So I think even in the phrasing of that, it's a little bit off. But anytime you get 98% to believe on anything, you can't hardly get 98% of people to believe that the earth is round and to get people to believe that the sky
is actually
blue.
There's not any issue where there's that high of a consensus.
Correct. So what that tells you is there's a lot of pressure. And it's really grown to the point where if you are a young earth creationist, you're laughed at, you're mocked. I think it should be the exact opposite. And that's really what we wanted to stand on in this episode is I want it to be the exact opposite. The truly ridiculous take is believing that something came from nothing over billions of years. I don't understand how that somehow became the reasonable and logical take for you to have, I don't know, something floating, which where'd that come from? I don't know. Something floating and then boom, it just exploded. And we literally defied the laws of thermodynamics, defied all of the laws of physics and had something created from nothing, an explosion or like order come out of chaos. We're supposed to believe this hogwash and think that we're smarter intellectually because we believe something that's physically impossible and has never, ever been recreated and cannot be recreated because it denies the laws of physics.
Conveniently can't be proven because it takes millions of years.
Correct. We'll never have the time to prove it because it was millions of years. Then it was a couple billion years. Now I think it's like 4 billion years. Then I heard somebody say 14 billion years. Man, why not? Hey, just shoot. Let's just go to
a couple
trillion
more billion
years.
On there.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's just go to a trillion years. How long do you need for something to come from nothing? So we want to reverse that and say, I think this needs to be mocked and laughed at, and all of the online atheists and skeptics and these people that love to laugh at Christians is, oh, you stupid Christians. We have a reason. We have an answer to how the earth came in. Yours is conjecture. Yours has changed in my lifetime. It has changed numerous times, and we're not supposed to laugh at you.
Right.
I'm not supposed to look at you and say, I'm not the one defying the laws of physics in my explanation. Mine actually says a design... A designer comes from a designer. Yeah. Like, is that difficult to believe? You're the one that told me that, you know, as your dad famously does, the shoe popped out of nothing. Who's getting laughed at here?
Right. What you'll find typically in these types of discussions for those who believe in this sort of thing is they will couch it, they will drape it in very scientific sounding language. They will use very intellectual, again, language and kind of the ways they describe it. Ultimately, if you believe in the theory of evolution, here's what you believe in. You believe that ultimately all of this came from nothing. Like, you know, they'll say that we're watering it down, but that is what you have to believe, is that it all came from nothing. And you have to believe that we came descended from apes. Again, oh, that's watering it down. That's what you have to believe. And so, again, they can drape it in all the scientific language that they want and call it this, call it that. You have to believe that we came from nothing. And Joe, you spoke to, I've got a couple points I don't know how much we want to get into. There are people that have broken down the different kind of rebuttals to the evidence for evolution, which is really shallow evidence.
We're going to get into that here momentarily.
Yeah, but my point was, I was going to say, they've done it far better than us, so we're not going to spend a ton of time. Like, that's not the point of this podcast. But a couple things that I wanted to say, Joe, you already spoke to one, and that is, you have to believe that we are not just, that it was not just a one-time thing, of like, you know, boom, explosion, now here we are. You have to believe that it is consistently progressing to essentially violate or contradict the laws of the second law of thermodynamics, which says everything
is atrophying.
Yes, everything basically, to put a, you know, non-scientific term to it, is going downhill. Everything is deteriorating. This room that we're filming in, if we left it and came back in 60 years, would it look better? Obviously, no. It's going to look worse. The dust is going to have accumulated. Some of the stuff in here is going to have rusted or whatever it is. Like, things get worse over time. And for evolution to be true, the opposite has to be true. Right. Things are getting better over time. And so that would be the first thing that I would say. And then the second thing that I wanted to bring up about this is, if you believe in evolution, and this is subtly throughout Charles Darwin's book, The Origin of Species, because it was also in the original title of his book. If you believe in evolution, inherent in that whole theory of us evolving from apes is that black people are less evolved than white people. That is inherent. Yikes. Like, and you can, you know, that's not me being racist. That is exactly what evolution teaches. Now, they're never going to come out and say that, but that is essentially what they're teaching, is that the white people are the furthest evolved, and that the darker your skin color, the closer in lineage you are to the apes. Why don't you go on CNN and say that one? Why don't you go to a scientific press conference and say that one? Of course, they're not going to say that. Darwin's original book, The Origin of Species, that really popularized evolution. He didn't create evolution, but he's the one that popularized it. It was literally called The Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection or the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. Evolution is inherently racist. And so I wanted to bring that point out. Like, obviously that doesn't get talked about a lot. That's not ever going to be at the front of the broadcast when it comes to evolution. But if you believe that, that is what you have to believe, is that an African American is closer to the apes than a white person is. And obviously that could not be further from the truth. And yet that's what you have to believe.
Man, that's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah.
And so, Darwin believed that. Sorry. Darwin clearly believed that.
We wanted to jump into the evidences for evolution. As you said, people have done this better than us. We're going to briefly discuss or touch on the five different evidences. I just Googled this. I looked up. There's a Reddit thread. I watched some YouTube videos on it. What's his name with Dawkins?
Richard Dawkins.
You know, I watched Alex O'Connor. Like, what are the strongest evidences? Yeah, there's a Reddit thread on the atheist Reddit forum or whatever it is. This was nice. Just from the AI on Google. They had five different things. Fossil record, molecular biology. Well, they had a couple things. I merged that with shared DNA, vestigial organs, embryology, and direct observation of evolution. So when it comes to the fossil record, we're going to briefly break these down. Once again, feel free to do more research. Convicted from Your Dad is a fantastic book. He goes into a lot of these things. Anvil Rings, Evidence Demands a Verdict, as you talked about.
I don't have enough to be an atheist.
Yeah, there's so many resources. Good resources. Thank you. Yeah. Good resources out there. As far as it goes with the fossil record, you can look at something like Mount St. Helens. You guys actually, I think you went and visited with your dad. Was that Reese?
That was me.
Was that? Yeah. So you went and visited with your dad. You can speak to this a lot better. How fast fossilized things can take place when there's a massive explosion like the Mount St. Helens volcano. So layers upon layers just, and we're talking over the course of just how short. I mean, it was very short.
30 years-ish. Yeah.
Yeah. And you had an entire fossil record basically within 30 years that it was created from this volcano. And so we're looking at it going, man, it would take billions of years to get there. It would take 30 years and even less with a cataclysmic thing like, oh, I don't know, maybe say a global flood. So when you're looking at the fossil record and how these layers would be laid down and all of these different things, this goes way far back. We have things in our timeline or in our lifetime and in our parents' lifetime that took place where we are seeing a fossil record materialize from nothing. From a volcanic eruption taking place and creating an entire fossil record in 3 decades. It's insane.
Well, the other thing about the fossil record, and I'm realizing we're going to have to move pretty fast through this. I'm going to hit the next one after this. But with the fossil record, so if we truly evolved from apes, then obviously the term missing link is commonly what people would recognize that as, which is essentially a fossil that would indicate a transitional phase between man and ape. There have been a lot that have been proposed to be missing links. All of them have turned out to be fabricated. Like, look them up. Look Lucy up. Look Neanderthal man up. Look Piltdown man, Java man. I mean, and these are their, obviously not their scientific names, but what their nicknames are. Lucy, I think, is probably the most famous. They're all fabricated. None of them are evidence. And the evidence or the reason why that all of them are fabricated is because you don't think that this would be the prized possession in the scientific community if we actually had a fossil that was the missing link.
You should have millions of these.
Exactly. And that's the other thing. You should have millions of them if we truly transition from apes. And that's the thing that, to me, it's so funny that they have fossil record as evidence for evolution is because it is the lack of fossil evidence for evolution that, to me, is one of the strongest arguments arguments against it, is that we should have millions and billions of these, and we don't. We literally, in fact, the ones that they present is so funny. It'll be a bone here, a bone there. It's conveniently never a full skeleton or anything like that.
Found 19 feet apart type of thing. Like,
yeah, exactly. It's weird. Like they're scrounging for this stuff. And so to me, the fossil record thing is like, there is an extreme lack of evidence in the fossil record of revolution. Another one that you got on here, Joe, though, is the vestigial organs that I want to speak to for just a second. Yeah. Vestigial organs are essentially the idea that humans have leftover parts in our body that we don't need anymore.
The appendix or something.
And it's those things that are evidence that that was from a previous phase, essentially, that we didn't need anymore. Interestingly enough, you know, decades and decades ago, scientists came up with allegedly 180 vestigial organs. And as time has gone on, that list has gotten shorter and shorter because they've realized, oh, actually, those do have a purpose. Originally, that list had things on it like your little toe, which if you've ever tried walking with your little without your little toe, good luck. Your tonsils, your appendix. I should have looked them up. A bunch of other stuff like that. They're like, well, you don't actually need those things. But again, as scientific and medical knowledge has increased, we've learned, oh, you actually do need your tonsils. Yes, you can live without them, but they do serve a purpose. All it takes for these alleged vestigial organs to not be vestigial is for them to serve a purpose. And your appendix does serve a purpose. Again, you can live without it, but it does serve a purpose. And so, again, it's funny to me that one's on there. I think that is one of the more ridiculous ones. But I'm kind of rambling, Joe. What one do you want to cover next?
No, you're good. Molecular biology, the shared DNA, this is a big one in their back pocket, they think, is, hey, there's a shared DNA you can find in the DNA strands of all living things, basically. Like, there are shared DNAs in here. And I'm looking at it like, okay, if you ever watch, I'm not a big, I don't watch like Tarantino movies, but, you know, in his movies, he has a shot, or like Christopher Nolan has a specific shot that is like, if you look at all his movies, like that's his signature shot. Brad Pitt is always eating in his movies. It's kind of his signature thing, right? Is it ridiculous to think that the creator of the universe would have like a connected piece of DNA that he throws into all of life? He breathed life into us. Like he brought life into creation. Is it ridiculous to think that there would be a DNA strand or code that is similar among all life forms, because that's the way that God designed it? They look at this as like, well, because we have some shared DNA, like, that doesn't speak to the fact that a creator didn't create it that way. He could have very easily created it with, once again, a signature piece of DNA or something along those lines. So from even a molecular biology, oh, there's all these things. What you're telling me is that, yes, we're related to the amoeba, that because there's a little bit of shared DNA, like, yeah, I can clearly see the resemblance. Well hold on. If you give the amoeba enough time, like, time doesn't create, okay? Make it a bazillion years. Time doesn't create in this instance. And so even from the shared DNA, I don't see how that disproves that God would have created us in that way.
I'll speak to something real fast, and then we got to keep moving. We're running out of time here. But the whole reproduction system, to me, this is one of the strongest like arguments against it, is the whole idea of like, okay, so Big Bang, whatever. You then need to create... Or I'm sorry, you need to not create, wrong choice of words, evolve the reproductive organs. Well, how long does that take? Because what's funny enough is until that reproductive system is fully established and ready to go, guess what you can't do? You can't reproduce, which means guess what? Your species dies out.
And very
so,
quickly.
And so evolution is built on the idea of millions of years, and it takes this. It takes such a long time to evolve all these parts and go from amoeba to human or whatever it is. You have to assume then that the reproductive functions were instantly perfect and were instantly functional. Otherwise, we don't exist in their viewpoint. Otherwise, you are not able to then reproduce. And so isn't it convenient that the very thing that you have to keep the species going, oh, that must have been instantly functional. But everything else took millions of years for us to slowly develop.
Well, here's this. You have to have that. You have to have a male and a female develop at the same exact time in the same location. They also both have to understand how to reproduce, understand biology, the function of how to reproduce. They also have to have the reproductive organs in the exact place where they need the reproductive organs, and they have to have eyeballs and senses to be able to find one another so that they actually can reproduce, and then they have to have favorable circumstances that when they do reproduce and when they do have offspring, that those offspring are going to be able to survive. They're going to be able to thrive, and you're going to have enough offspring to continue the race.
What a coincidence.
The odds of that taking place at the same time, oh, well, I'm not saying, you know, the odds are kind of astronomical, but it happened. It's like, So the odds are greater than God creating things? Like, you're telling me that you think there is a greater chance of that taking place than there being a designer to the universe. You can look at the eyeball. You can look at the human brain. You can look at things that we, to this day, in all our technology, have no idea how this would have come about. We couldn't design it this well with our top technology. If you look at just a human eyeball, and we're supposed to say that that wasn't designed, that that naturally came about and it just evolved over time. And that's one of the things is the direct observation of evolution. Well, look, you know, we can overcome, you look at viruses. Well, these viruses mutate and they grow. Like, I'm not saying microevolution doesn't take place.
Yeah, that's a good distinction.
It is the finches, right, from Darwin's finches on the Galapagos Islands of, well, man, their beaks have evolved over time. Like, yeah, I'm sure some of them developed longer.
Changes within species do take place.
Correct, yeah, absolutely. You know, the hooves of a horse used to be a single hoof, and now it's a split hoof. Like, yes, and over time, that probably developed to help them after multiple times. The horse didn't turn into an alligator, right. Okay? It changed its hoofs. So let's pump the brakes here for a second and realize microevolution may take place where things evolve to create maybe more favorable conditions in certain circumstances. The idea of, again, breaking the second law of thermodynamics would really be like going from a lesser species to a greater species. Developing over time longer necks for a giraffe or something so it can reach the fruit up at the top of the trees or something makes sense. Those that have longer necks are going to survive. Those that don't are going to die off. It's survival of the fittest. Yeah. In that situation, evolution, quote unquote, is real. Microevolution, not macroevolution. The other one's embryology.
The giraffe didn't turn into a different species.
Correct. Exactly. It's just the longer necks survived and they reproduced with longer necks because that's the ones that could reach the higher fruit. So, you know, they had embryology on here. Very similar thing to the vestigial organs. Like, well, the embryos really look similar of a horse and of a pig and of an animal or of a human. Yes, mammals may have similar embryos. How does that disprove God or disprove the design element of it? Because when you look at how the embryos form over time, it's massively different. So I don't once again see how that would disprove God and disprove creation.
We're going to, I'm sure, do a different episode at some point about how you can prove that God exists. But Joe, you sparked something in me, and this might end up being my closing comments. But the whole idea of the design we see around us, and so one of the best examples that I think of is like this computer that's in front of us. Is there any chance, like just any chance in 1,000 years that this computer could have been developed, you know, by itself, like without any human interaction? And everybody in the brain goes, well, no, of course not. I've got a slide somewhere that talks about all the different components that go into making an iPhone, like 70 different pieces. Yeah. It touches like 13 different countries, like so much. Like, do you ever think an iPhone come into? Well, no, of course not. Our brains and our DNA are infinitely more complex than this computer or my iPhone that's recording this video, and yet we're willing to say, well, isn't it convenient how our brains and our DNA just happen to do it, but we can't get a computer and iPhone? Like,
while thousands of other species are doing the same exact thing at the same exact time. What a coincidence. Right.
Wow, how nice is that? And I've got another slide that talks about the statistical odds that our planet just happens to be in the right place, right rotation, right tilt, right distance from the sun, all those that just happens to be, the odds are astronomical. And yet that's the more scientific thing to believe. Obviously, this is a passion point of ours. What we're trying to do here, and then Joe, I'll kind of let you wrap us up if you want, is we're trying to paint the picture that it is just as stupid for somebody to make the argument that evolution is the more intellectual. Rhett McLaughlin on the video, I didn't watch the whole thing, but you know, he was fully convinced that evolution. I'm sorry, you can't be fully convinced. There is still, and this is the last thing I'll say, there is still going to be some level of belief and stepping out on a limb that you have to make, even if you want to believe in evolution. That's what people will say with Christianity. It's like, well, at the end of the day, you still have to have some level of faith, and I would agree with that. You still got to do that with evolution too. There is no world in which you can say, oh, evolution is proven. Evolution, it's not proven. It's still an evolutionary theory. It's not a scientific law. And so I have a big problem with the whole idea that it is intellectually ignorant to believe in a God who designed everything, and it is smart to believe that all this stuff, again, the computer, the iPhone, electricity, all the, like, those things couldn't have happened by chance, but our brains and the entire universe could have. I know we're kind of being snarky with it, but it's because those are the tactics that are used against Christians, and I think it's time to return that back a little bit.
Bingo. That's exactly it. they're going to try to wow you with their intellectualism. They're going to talk about astronomy and all of these highfalutin ideas and string theory and wow, you know, we couldn't possibly, and it couldn't be a young Earth because look at the universe. Maybe the universe is really old, but the Earth is young. Maybe we'll concede. Don't concede on any of these points. God designed it the way he designed it. And if God wanted to design it 6 to 10,000 years ago and set the universe the universe ages faster than the Earth, great. You know, I suppose we can debate that. If we want to, at the end of the day, don't take away the great power of God and don't be bamboozled by the intellectual arguments, because while they're busy trying to talk about string theory and you got, what's his name, as they trot out the black astronomer, scientist,
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Thank you. And he tries to make you just feel like 2 inches tall because he uses all these big terms. It's like, and yet you believe in the most improbable thing of all time that defies physics, defies everything that we possibly know.
But you're the scientific one.
You're the scientific one. You're the smart one, and I'm an idiot for believing that design demands a designer. Please, try to
miss me with that.
Like, don't get this garbage out of here of the big highfalutin terms of, wow, it couldn't possibly be this. It's like, you know zero. Everything comes down to conjecture. It comes down to, we think this is what happened, and in my lifetime, you've expanded it billions of years because you don't know. Quite frankly, you have no idea, and we do. So I'm going to take my side. I do know what happened. I know how it happened. I know why it happened. They have no why either. Why in the world would these molecules just, wow, how lucky? I don't think we're here by chance. That's a depressing mindset.
Yeah.
That's a depressing ideology that we have zero reason to be here. You are sludge and slime, and that's all you're ever going to be. Then why not just go and drink and smoke and you know, have sex with whoever you want. 80 years,
live it up. Yeah.
Right. Morality goes out the window. Like, there's so many there's so many reasons for why God exists, but also why evolution is ridiculous. That's what we're getting at. Yes, I'm passionate about it. I'm sick of people conceding points. William Lane Craig conceding points of evolution. Don't concede anything to these losers. Don't concede anything to the scientific community. Stand back and go, where's your evidence? Oh, the evidence is all around. Like, step outside, man. My evidence is all around. You think the grass got here, the trees and everything else? Evidence is all around us if you just open your eyes and stop hating God and stop trying to make science God. Science is not God. God created science. And so, yes, I'm passionate. I get frustrated at these things. I get frustrated that we're talked down to like we're idiots when they're believing in ridiculousness. Ridiculousness. I don't know. It frustrates me. But anyway, yes, we went a little long on this one. We had a good time with it, though.
Yeah,
this is something
we're
passionate about. Check out Dad's.
My dad.
Your dad, Mr. Brad, Dr. Brad Harib. Your dad's content on it. He's got Convicted is a fantastic book. We got things on the Focus Press channel. Make sure to check those out if you're interested. Yeah, they're dated. They're a little old on the videos. We'll maybe update those one day. But still fantastic stuff. I think it's as good as you're going to get. So, any other things that you'd add?
I don't think so. I appreciate everybody listening, and we'll talk more about this stuff again as the episodes continue to trickle out, and I guess that's all I have.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for letting us rant on this one. This has been episode 120 of the Godly Amen podcast. We will catch you next week.